Hi, everybody. Welcome to New Life Live. Steve Arterburn here, and joining me today, two of my favorite people, Dr. Sherry Denham and Mylon Yurkovich, and your phone calls right here today on New Life Live.
I've struggled with depression my whole life.
I'm hanging in there.
That does not sound good.
I have a problem. I came across some pornography a couple of weeks ago on television, and I watched it.
I find myself constantly trying to take care of everything for my husband.
It affects them in different ways, but still, it's a bad thing for their hearts and their souls and their minds.
Anyone saying that that family of origin horrendous sin is irrelevant to be dealt with is an idiot.
The act of sharing it will take the punch out of it. Keeping it a secret makes it more magical. It goes into the realm of fantasy, and that does set you up. Marriages need to be protected.
Yes, they do. Marriages need to be protected. And when you heard that intro there, we weren't actually calling someone an idiot. But it was just kind of sounding off there. I want to clarify that. Hi, Mylon.
Hello, hey, Sherry. Steve.
Hey.
And you really did come out of the gates flying there on that your statement. And I thought it was really good. If people say the family of origin is irrelevant, they're an idiot. That's a quote. I didn't say that, but it's a quote from somebody famous. But you know, the Bible says that, train up a child in the way which he should go, and when he's old, he won't depart from it. And that's true positively and negatively. The fact that the brain is shaped and formed by our environment and our caregivers is an established fact, and it's either going to be a good outcome or not so good outcome. And I think you made a really great point. A lot of people want to forget their histories, but the Bible tells us to never forget our history.
Well, and I love it. In session, when I meet with a couple, one of the first things I do is I do three generations on both sides. We look at three generations of what their families look like.
That's a great idea.
Emotional feeling. You know, David Stoop, Dr. Stoop was my professor at Fuller,
yes, well,
and
he
taught me how to do that.
Yes.
I know, he taught me how to do that. But I do it all the time. And I tell you something, there is nothing more amazing than watching a couple soften and start to have compassion and understanding for one another when they actually sit in listening to the
histories.
Other person's family history.
It does create compassion
and
empathy. Huge.
I mean, you can have a really combative couple in there, and you start just kind of going, well, let's look at what's going on. What's your backstory? What's the context? And all of a sudden, there's some hope, and it all makes sense. The light bulbs start to go off, and gives you something to move forward with. So,
and there is some good news too that Dave and I have been sharing, and that is that you can be genetically predisposed to something. It can be in your family tree. It can be in your whole line in your family. And you, through your behavior and choices, can turn that switch off on that gene. If all in your family tree has been overeating, and you find a way to keep the weight off, there is a good chance that you will flip off that gene you inherited that might predispose you to weight gain. And if you do that before you have a child, then there is a very good chance that your child won't have to suffer the way others coming down your family tree have had to suffer. I mean, I just think that's phenomenal. I think it's fantastic.
It's hopeful. I mean, we can change. Our behavior can change going forward. We don't have to stay the same. We can be that transitional person that sets our family up going forward. So.
Yeah. Well, I would just say that the two people I've got on today, one is a brainiologist, and the other is an attachmentologist,
and I love youologist as well.
When we come back, we're going to hear from both of them as we answer calls. And really, if you've never heard any of the things that Sherry can talk about of the brain, and if you've never heard Mylon talk about attachment and how it affects all of us, well, we're going to do that today, because these are the people that I believe they know this stuff, and they can see the result of when we know and then we act on what we know. So we'll do that when we come back. 1-800-NEW-LIFE. If you need some help, there are people that want to help you, right?
At New Life, we are passionate about helping people experience recovery. And it's no exception when it comes to recovery from the addiction to drugs or alcohol. We are very grateful to have found what we believe is the premier facility to offer a Christian 12-step model of care. It treats the whole person and offers biblical values as the foundation for treating the mind, body, and spirit. Our partner in drug and alcohol addiction provides exemplary medical and psychiatric care, as well as Christian-based psychotherapy, pastoral counseling, biblical studies and meditation, educational groups, worship and prayer, and a Christian 12-step program. The approach is non-denominational and guides the patient to experience freedom through a renewed relationship with Jesus Christ. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE if you or someone you love is struggling with drug or alcohol addiction. That's 1-800-639-5433 or go to newlife.com. 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, back to the program.
Well, we are back. Steve Arterburn here with Mylon Yurkovich and Dr. Sherry Denham, and I guarantee you we're going to be talking about the brain and attachment. It's going to be a great program. I'm glad you're here. Tell somebody else that you know to come and join us on the program. All right, let's talk to Marilyn from Templeton, California. KLFF is the station. Hello, Marilyn.
Hello.
How are you today?
Well, I'm full of anxiety. I'm having troubles with a few things, but I've had my first, listening to Sherry, I've had my first EMDR appointment. And when I went in my car, I realized, oh my gosh, she didn't spend an hour with me. It was two for some of my intake, and it's got every kind of abuse from my past. And so I just, my question was, how does EMDR work? And with so much a lifetime of trauma, car accidents, I was in the San Simeon earthquake, which all this devastating on the news about these tornadoes has kind of brought it all back up for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would guess so. Well, Sherry, why don't you tell us what EMDR is, and then tell us why, the best theory on why it works.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you started, Marilyn. I'm proud of you. It took your first step. EMDR stands for Eye Movement Desensitization and Reprocessing. Very long name. But basically, what it does is when someone has had trauma in their background, their brain goes into fight, flight, or freeze. Your brain actually gets turned up, kind of like a Bunsen burner or like on a range where the flames get turned up. Your internal brain gets turned up really high. And there's three parts of the brain that actually get more impacted than others. One is the limbic system, which is the reason some people get depressed. Another is the basal ganglia, and those are like the gas pedal of the brain. That gets turned up real high. And then the cingulate gyrus, which is a gear shifter of the brain, gets turned up real high. So there's kind of a little, there's what's called a diamond pattern in the brain. It just gets turned up. And the goal of EMDR is to help calm that brain down again naturally. So it uses eye movement, kind of like with REM, you know, rapid eye movement when you're sleeping. If you ever watch somebody when they sleep, their eyes kind of twitch a little bit. Well, you know, somebody created this about 20 years ago, and it just uses the natural process, kind of like the eyes moving during REM, to process the trauma. It goes from right brain to left brain. So you actually, trauma is stored not only thoughtfully, we think, but we also, it's stored emotionally. So let's say something happens that's been horrific. Like you said, an earthquake, tornado, car accident. Sometimes people store a thought like, I'm in danger. And so they'll kind of stay in that hypervigilant state. I'm in danger. Even though the tornado's over, the car accident's over, the earthquake's over, they live in hypervigilant. Even you, Marilyn, hearing about the tornadoes, you know, shows you your brain's already working way too hard. So EMDR helps to quiet that brain down by going into that trauma. You don't relive it. You just use the eye movement to kind of touch in on an emotional, thoughtful plane and shift you from I'm in danger to it's over now. I'm okay. And so it's a certain kind of therapy that helps to do that. But just in a nutshell, that's what it does. So it, I think it's a powerful tool in trauma. I work a lot with people with post-traumatic stress disorder.
And the key word that you used was to desensitize the brain.
Yes,
the
calms it down.
Calms it down. Mm-hmm. And so we know from neuroscience that a lot of these pathways are established through trauma. It's like this deep imprint in clay. And what this EMDR does, it sort of softens the imprint back out again to a normal place.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating, like you said, with the eyes, rapid eye movement. Why do we sleep and our eyes go back and forth? You see,
I know. God made
designed,
this.
See, God designed the eyes to go back and forth. And somebody thought, I wonder if we do that, if we can create a desensitization process. And it seems to work.
It does. I've seen before and after brain specs where before and after EMDR and the brain actually looks different after you've gone through a series of treatments.
So,
your symptoms go away. Once your brain quiets down, then the symptoms of anxiety, depression, you know, some of the OCD stuff actually can calm down as well.
Traumatic
stress and OCD and all this, and how many sessions does it typically, or is there no typical?
Yeah, it's different for, layered trauma takes longer, and when you sit with someone who's certified, they can kind of help gauge you for that. It's different for everyone, but, you know, if you've got one trauma, it can be maybe a series of 6 to 12, but if you've got multiple traumas, it's going to take longer. But I think it's, you know, for trauma specifically, it feels to me like we get to issues that might take 4 or 5 sessions of talk therapy. I get to it much quicker using that tool.
Okay, so could we say that the process is trying to separate the past from the future conscious state of mind?
Yes.
Is that?
Yeah. Okay. Biblically, I look at it as it's taking someone out of the lie. The lie, which is what was set in back then, it really did happen, but it's kind of been set. And I even see where the enemy has spiritual strongholds over things like if there's been abuse, somebody might believe that I am unlovable. Mm-hmm. And I see how Satan goes in and clamps onto that, and somebody can live that belief for 40 years. And there can be hundreds of people along their path that say, you're really lovable. And they're like, yeah, really? No, I'm not. Mm-hmm. But you're right, Steve. What I see with EMDR, it's one tool that I use that helps bring people into the truth, which I am lovable. That's a biblical principle.
That's right.
Because it got set down in an emotional way, it's like we got to go back into those roots, pull up those ugly roots, and then replant it in a pot that's fresh, that's new, and that is going forward, and they have freedom through that.
Well,
I
think another way of looking at it is, let's say a person almost drown, and they around water, they, you know, they start to panic, and you walk up and you find them at the bottom of a pool trying to get out, but the pool has been drained. There's absolutely no reason to worry about drowning again, and yet because there's a pool there, and what this does, it tries to rip that pool out of their head a little bit there. Or out of the conscious head, they won't ever forget the pool, so it doesn't dominate their whole life.
Yeah,
it's
a great example, Steve. It's almost like them finally coming to the realization that I'm really not in the pool anymore.
Yeah.
I was in the pool, I survived that, and I'm not in the pool anymore.
Yeah.
I know that sounds simple on a thinking level, but,
well, but
you know, again, we've got to go into the emotion, and that emotion helps to move people to change rather than just trying to think their way out of it.
And I think we have memories in two arenas. We carry memories in an explicit memory system, which is I can retrieve a memory from my brain. Oh, I remember being on radio with Sherry. We also have what's called an implicit memory system, which is in body feeling states and reactions of, like you said, Steve, I feel like I'm drowning even though the pool isn't there. I all of a sudden have this feeling well up within me, comes out of nowhere, and all of a sudden I'm held captive by that feeling.
You're right, Mylan.
So
It's like feelings trump logic all day
right.
long.
They trump the logic because these feeling states are so powerful. The feeling of panic, like you use the word, Steve, comes up. And I think we have to understand what we now know about the brain is we have two capacities to experience memory. One is in the cognitive side. The other is in body feeling states.
You're right, Mylon.
And I'm working with body feeling states all the time in my office because that is a sound, a noise, a tone. Somebody's just a quiet comment, but the person's paralyzed by it. A stare of the eyes.
Yeah.
Somebody just making a gesture. Somebody turning their back on somebody. And all of a sudden, this feeling rises up inside that's powerful.
Yeah.
And these were traumatic events, and trauma comes in. And would you say, Sherry, that this is more for acute traumas or chronic slow-grade traumas?
It's both, actually.
It is both.
You can
help
it
both.
For both. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right,
go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to step in and say, okay, let's say I'm a new listener, and I didn't know what this program was all about, and I was I'm a conservative person here, and I tune in and I hear us talking about MDR, and I look that up in my Bible concordance. It's not there. And what do you say to that person that says, surely this is something that can't be good because some man made it up and it's just not in the Bible? What do you say to that person?
Well, I ask people all the time, you know, what era do you want to live in? Do you want to live in the Excedrin era? The Apostle Paul in the Philippian jail did not have an Excedrin to take for his headache after he got beaten in Philippi. You see,
true.
I happen to live in the Excedrin era where I can take, you know, an Excedrin and get rid of my headache. And I'm a headache wimp to begin with. If I just feel one starting, bam, I got to take that. Well, yeah. So what era am I in? What technology will I take advantage of? I'm wearing glasses right now. Will I squint the rest of my life and not wear glasses? What aspect of science and technology will I accept? Now, there's whole movements of people, Steve, that want to deny the technology advancements and live 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 300 years ago. And there's groups of people that choose to do that. So I think we have to say, will I accept the heart surgery? Will I accept the medication to help my diabetes? What era will I live in? And will I accept the technology that and the research that goes along with it? Will I get on a plane?
Could I throw another analogy at you?
Well, I'd love one.
Well, the person that is not willing to use new technology, the person that says, no, 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 even though this has been researched, even though this tool has been found to be effective and it doesn't cause people to stop going to church or reading their, in fact, it clears things up. It helps them understand better when they do go to church and when they do read the Bible. But if you're a person that just says, absolutely not, things like this, you should not use them, then I want to be sure and encourage you that the next time you go to the dentist, you be sure all that dentist uses is whiskey and a pair of pliers to get that tooth out. Because essentially
Ow.
You're denying the technology that has been developed over dentistry, and you don't find that technology in the Bible.
So, well, you can't find antibiotics, and we could go on all day long
right,
about what you
right.
cannot find in a concordance.
Well, and you know, Steve, it's funny as you say that because I have worked a lot with believers over the years and in trauma. And I had Christians coming to me saying, I know the word. I know the truth. I know what God has spoken over my life. Why can't I get there?
Yeah.
And so it was just a part of my journey to try to find another tool on my tool belt. It's not for everybody, right? But just another tool that in certain cases when someone has had trauma in their past, I use it. Because if I can get somebody from a place of darkness to light, get them out of that lie, the bondage that the enemy wants to get us in, and have them start walking in truth, I'll pull it out of my toolbox.
Sure,
why wouldn't
right.
I? You know, and yeah. and,
well, and but you see, what they're doing is they're entering into relationship with you, a person. So the Bible and God is not enough. We've established that on the show, that to be isolated without the community of Christ is to only experience half of what God has told us He invented for us as social creatures. We have a social brain, and if we have a social brain, it responds to the social. And if that's the case, then we have all the one another's of Scripture that tell us to comfort each other, love one another, encourage, support, care for, and bear one of those burdens. Well, that must do something to the brain. God knows that ahead of time. He invented the brain, you see.
Yeah.
So as we as we discover these things, it is in relationship, whether it's a therapeutic mode or whether it's just I simply talk to you and you look me in the eyes and go, that's a terrible thing that happened to you. I'm not alone.
At the recovery meeting this past Sunday, a woman expressed just the opposite of bearing burdens. She came down with a deep depression, and rather than people bear it, they accused her of having a problem. Well, she was teaching Bible study fellowship. I mean, she was about as into the church and into the Word as you could get. But she had a clinical depression, and yep. She needed medication to get out of it. But bearing one another's burdens, the last thing people did was try to help her bear her burden. They dumped more burden on her. And
that's
so
sad.
She had depression and shame and rejection
really sad.
To deal with. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with more of Mylan, Sherry, and Steve Arterburn here and your phone calls. We're glad you're with us today.
I wish I was who you think I am. The one you thought you married. The ideal husband, the amazing dad, the great lover. But my mind is filled with darkness, with images that I can't erase. I want so desperately to be the man you dreamed of. The man I know I can be. I am terrified to talk to you about this, but I want to. I need to. I want us to be close just as badly as you do. Can I talk to you? Can we be totally honest and know that we love each other enough to be open?
At New Life, we've helped thousands of men just like this find hope, healing, and a plan to move forward with their lives through our one-of-a-kind Every Man's Battle Intensive Weekend. Call us right now at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433.
I need help. I want help. I can't do this on my own.
1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hi, this is Stephen Arterburn from New Life Ministries. We know that Christian counseling changes lives. We hear evidence of that every day.
I feel like I'm a person for the first time in my life. I feel like I wasn't whole before or that I couldn't enjoy life. I had such a big weight on my shoulders that I had nothing to look forward to. I'm such a better wife, and I'm a better daughter, friend, a better worker. I feel absolutely free.
Our nationwide network of licensed Christian counselors means there is help available near you.
If anybody is considering Christian counseling, then they need to do it. They need to take that step.
You don't have to be stuck where you are, but you can't really expect to change unless you take action. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. It could be the start of a whole new life for you. Christian counseling works, and we can help. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE today. Someone who cares is always there at 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
We'd love to hear from you if you have a question or comment. Call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now, back to New Life Live.
Well, we are back. Steve Arterburn here with Dr. Sherry Denham and Mylan Yurkovich. And your phone calls, by the way, if you give a gift of $50 or more, we will send you a Bible, either the Life Recovery Bible or Every Man's Bible. We would love to do that for you. And we've got an amazing weekend coming up, July the 22nd. And, you know, it doesn't do any good to look back at your life is a big lie that people will try to tell you. And we're going to talk about that lie, and we're going to give you the opportunity to investigate some things. That's what we'll be doing that weekend. So come and join us. If you are stuck, if you have been in the midst of a relationship after relationship, and you need some help to reverse that pattern, or if there's ungrieved losses in your life, we want to help you. So call us at 1-800-NEW-LIFE and let us give you some help. All right, let's go over here and talk with Paula. She is a member of Club New Life, I'm told, And there she is from Albany, Oregon. NRB Network is where she watches the program. Hi there.
Hi.
How you doing?
Really nervous.
Okay, that's all right. Well,
but I'm so honored to talk to you. I've listened for a long time on the radio and the TV.
Great.
And
thank you.
And other people's stories always help me. Maybe my story will help somebody else.
Well, what is your story?
Okay. I've had multiple marriages in my past.
How many would that be?
Pardon me?
How many would that be?
I've had six husbands, and I married one twice, so I've had seven marriages.
Okay.
And I've been single for 15 years.
Wow. So you went through all of that, and then you stayed single 15 years, or are you married now?
Yeah. No, I've stayed single for 15 years. I finally hit bottom, and I went 5 years without being married before I married the last one, and I was married to him for about 2 years, and now I've been single for 15 more years.
In looking back, can you identify something that they all had in common or most of them had in common?
Yes, it was abuse. And lack of very cold. Every man that I was married to was cold, far as loving, and abused. I can't talk.
Okay.
I would get married and then I'd get beat up or mistreated enough until I'd leave. And I had three little babies, and I had polio surgeries.
Mm.
And I'm a RN, so I've got a good brain, but I just would marry the wrong man.
Well, were these relationships kind of a reenactment of your relationship with your father when you were younger?
Yes. Yes. My father was abusive. He would throw me and kick me and hit me until I was 18.
And where was your mother in all that?
She would listen, and she would be in the background. Finally, when I guess she waited until I got enough punishment, and then she would stop him. But he just couldn't stop unless she stopped him.
I'm so sorry you went through that. What a horrible, horrible way to live. It's horrible. Well, what's the question for us then?
Okay, my question is, I don't know if it's okay for me to think about dating, but I'm getting close to 60 years old, and I'm really longing for that companionship. I wanted to know, can I think about dating? I listened to you talk about how to do it. And if so, how much do I reveal about my past? And just getting in the dating scene again and talking to anyone, women or anyone, how much do I reveal?
Okay, great question. I would start off our conversation just by saying, well, whatever you reveal, you wouldn't necessarily need to reveal everything the first night that you had a date. But what I would be more concerned about is what have you done to reverse this trend? Because I would hate for you to start dating and then all of a sudden, boom, you're married again, and it's kind of the same old story there. Have you done some things to help?
Yes. A lot.
Okay.
And I think the biggest thing is my relationship with God now is number one. And but like, what kind of things do you mean?
Do you have girlfriends you hang out with and you guys go to different groups and stuff and do some healthy things?
Yes, but not a tremendous amount. A lot of the years, part of the time I've, you know, kind of hibernated and just avoided all of it.
Yeah, okay.
You happen to call in at a great time, Paula. We just have to happen to have Mylan here, who's wrote the book How We Love. So he really is the expert on attachment. Because I'm sitting here listening to your story, and I thought, oh my goodness. You know, just sigh. This is a woman who has spent her whole life being abused.
Yep.
And there is a pattern of being a victim. And there's also a pattern of you choosing avoidant, controlling, abusive men. And so Steve is posing a really good question for you to think about, is really, what have you done? What work have you done? What therapy have you done to look at that? Because your people picker has issues, right?
Yes. Well, I've been through counseling a number of times over the years, especially in the beginning. I went through counseling, and I didn't even pick my first counselor very well, because after about a year...
Okay, hold on. We're going to go to a break. We'll talk more right after this.
I just absolutely believe in the mission of New Life, and I feel that the materials provided and the biblical counseling perspective is so valuable and not available in so many places, and New Life and membership in Club New Life provides access to the live program and also CDs available to listen to. So I know it's easy to turn on the radio and receive the benefit, but those services don't come without expense, and I would sure like to see the program remain on. So I would like to challenge listeners who listen and receive benefit but haven't yet given to actually give this year and continue the giving, of course, because more people need to hear.
Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE and ask how you can start your Club New Life membership today. 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hi, everybody. Max Locato here. You know, I've been a pastor for over 25 years, and in the process, I've been fortunate to cross paths a few times with Steve Arterburn and his team at New Life. And I can tell you for a fact that these are good people doing real ministry work where the rubber meets the road. One of the ways they help people is through their New Life Weekend. The Apostle Paul writes about finding the transformation that comes from the renewing of your mind. That's what these folks at New Life specialize in. Whether you struggle with anger, unforgiveness, depression, grief, boundaries issues, maybe you've never worked through the pain of a past abortion, maybe you need a marriage tune-up, maybe your marriage is in crisis. Listen, these good people can help you. Call them today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433 and ask about the New Life Weekend.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now, back to the program.
We are back, and we're talking with Paula, and we want Mylon to weigh in here on the multiple marriages that she's had. She's 60 and just about ready to date again, wants to know what she ought to do.
Well, I can't stand the pressure with that build up, Steve and Sherry. I mean, I got to come up with something good here, but
you,
Paula,
really do.
I know. Darn, Paula.
Yes.
I echo the sigh that Sherry sighed a moment ago when she took a deep breath and she sighed and she said, "Oh my goodness, you've had a life that's been a victim your whole life." And Sherry's right. If we've been trained on something, that is familiar. And as much as we may not like it, we can tend to find ourselves with people who are as similar as we are in some way. So my wife, the co-author of our book, made this brilliant statement: the more chaotic your childhood, the more chaotic your adulthood. And certainly that has been true of you. And I'd like to suggest that just being single 15 years is not a guarantee of growth.
Okay. Well, I just want to ask you something first, please. Is it okay with God if I have a marriage? Because that's why I haven't worked on it. I just felt like I had enough chances and
right.
I couldn't have any more chances.
Well, I think that's a great question. I think at this point, you know, you could probably say, I want to draw a line in the sand and find a really healthy person and move on in my life. All these people were unkind. They were abusive. If they were abusive, they were probably people who didn't honor God or you. And you could probably say, well, I've chosen to take on a new life here where I choose to be with Christians or find people who care for me. I'd like to suggest it will be in relationship that you learn how to get healthier Hibernation, okay. Hibernation does not help you get healthier. It's like saying I want to be a boxer, but I'm going to think about boxing or watch videos. The only way you can get better at boxing is by hitting a bag or getting in the ring with a partner and practicing, which is what you need to do. And then what Sherry said about having a broken picker, what you need to do is to be able to slow down and really slow down the process. I bet a lot of these marriages were very fast and impulsive.
Oh, yes. See? In fact, that's one of my character defects is I'm very impulsive with lots
of
things.
Well, that's not a character defect. That is a developmental defect that by the time you are, you know, 3, 4, 5, and 6 years old, your parents should have taught you delayed gratification and the ability to not be impulsive. But if they didn't, if they didn't train that into you by that time, it's difficult for us to then build later in life. It's not a character development. It's an effing parenting on their part.
Oh.
Okay. And then I want to say this, that God does not want you to go get married.
Okay.
But I think God might love to see you have some fun and go out with some people and date. See, when you ask that question about marriage and you're not even dating yet, it just says a little bit that you're putting the cart before the horse. You do not want to be out there dating and looking for a husband. You want to be out there dating and having a good time and learning about yourself and also stretching some of those muscles that we were talking about here, where you can literally say, ooh, this guy's putting a little pressure on me. I think this is going to be our last time together.
So, Steve and Sherry, how long do you guys think a average healthy couple should date before they get married?
Steve and Sherry. No less than a year.
Yeah, I agree. You kind of want to walk around the calendar once. At least walk around the calendar before you make a decision. All the seasons, family, holidays, so you kind of see it all, at least a lot.
Top of that, there should be some... I have a couple in my office right now. They're going through what I call pre-marital counseling.
Yeah.
They're just trying to say, you know, we're together, we really like each other, but, hey, these issues are getting pulled up inside of us. And we're a little bit scared by these. What do they mean? And so there's another set of eyes and ears, Paula, helping you make these assessments, and somebody who's professional, who can help look upon your situation, can give you wisdom and insight to do what Steve just said.
Right.
Is this a red flag? Should I pay attention to that? And to help you assess.
Yeah, and where were all these girlfriends? Where were your girlfriends when you were making these marriage choices? Why weren't they over there saying to you, ooh, don't do that?
Yeah, well, I never listened to anybody.
Yeah.
I did have friends that said that, but I was so needy. And that's a big thing now is I was afraid to be alone, and I'm so much stronger. I do lots of things, I just wanted to know what you felt about it because I've been taught so much in church that it's too late, you know, that if you've been divorced, you know, over and over, you just can't ever have that again. And so now that I know, I want to get involved with a counselor with New Life because
good.
I picked a counselor that turned out to be an abusive relationship years ago. It was crazy.
It can happen.
Yeah, and so you didn't stay, right? Because that was good. You walked away from that. But I'm going to just cut to the chase, Paula. My concern for you, victims that I work with, they really feel worthless and unlovable, and they become desperate, needy women. And you end up living out of that place and making choices out of that place, and a woman of worth and a woman of value will turn up her nose when she's not treated like a daughter of the king. So I want you to get into therapy, and I want you to begin to work with a godly Christian counselor on developing a attitude of a princess. You are a daughter of the king. And I want you to start going into healing so that you live that way. You don't just think it in your head, but you start living with that positive sense of regard, knowing that you don't deserve to be treated poorly, but you've got to move out of that victim place. So you need some work, I think, before stepping back into anything long term.
Let me send you.
I just had to know if it was possible before I could go into the work, because it's so humiliating to carry that around. I just feel like I have this big weight in my past that nobody knows what a reject I am.
I get it, honey. But do you hear the grave clothes? You're still wearing those old grave clothes. You got old grave clothes, you're going to find a guy that's standing on the side of the road with a sign. I'll take a woman with grave clothes.
I see what you mean. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so I just need to do the counseling.
You've got to get in and look at why you're still wearing those grave clothes. They've got to come off.
Okay.
And then the change in beliefs and thinking and really coming out of the victim place of saying, I'm not going to tolerate bad behavior, because you're worth more than that.
And you need to do what Steve just said. Date. Don't go hunting for marriage. Just expose yourself and find out what healthy people are like. And if they aren't, like Steve said, if you say, well, God, he is not a good guy. And your counselor can help you with that.
Yep.
And you can say no. Now, when you have the ability to not by default get married just because you're, as you said, desperate, but and you have the default to be able to say no, and then you actually then have the ability to choose.
Absolutely.
And it's
how nice is that?
Yes, it is. Only when you have the ability to say no do you have the ability to then choose and say yes. Your yes means something.
As soon as I get the counseling and I can unpack the guilt from the past, I think I can do that.
You can.
Good.
You can. The Lord is a redeemer.
We're counting on it. We're counting on you doing that.
And then, then to answer your question, before you get married, if you ever do, that person should know your whole history, because if I am ever going to marry somebody, I want to know their whole history.
And
I have a tendency to spill it all out to people in the beginning.
Too much.
I wonder if it's because I want them to reject me fast.
Well,
or something.
Like you said, you have struggled with impulse control. So people that struggle with impulse control just say too much. And that's a sign of not being too healthy. If somebody starts telling me everything in the whole world in the first 30 seconds, I go, I'm going to push myself away from this person.
Yeah.
So learn to regulate the amount of output, okay?
At 60, you have a journey at 60, and there are a lot of things to learn on that journey. And so you stay in touch with us and let us know how it comes out, because we'll be interested to see what happens there. So God bless you. I'm glad that you waited 15 years, but like Mylon said, that 15 years... that needs to be 15 years that where there's some real good growth going. Now you've got a chance to grow. So let us know. I'm going to send you to Avoiding Mr. Wrong, and I'll send
Steve,
you how we love.
Can I make a quick comment there? You invited Paula to call us back and to report. But what if we're not on the air? You see, in order to invite her to call us back, it means we have to still be on the air. And that's why we need, and I think in the next segment, to tell people what our need is to continue to help us stay on the air.
We will do that right after this. You're listening to New Life Live, and we are glad that you are. And we are a listener-supported radio program and television. If you like what we do or say, please help us by supporting us. You can do that by calling 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Okay, we'll take the break and come back for our final segment right after this.
Hi, this is Stephen Arterburn from New Life Ministries. We know that Christian counseling changes lives. We hear evidence of that every day.
My relationships with my husband, with my friends, with my family are much richer and deeper and honest. Particularly my relationship with God, I see Him in a more accurate form and begin to trust Him more. There's joy and there's peace because I have the internal tools that I can trust. So it's radically changed my life. I'm just not even the same person.
Our nationwide network of licensed Christian counselors means there is help available near you.
Take the leap, jump in, and go for it. It's changed my life completely.
You don't have to be stuck where you are, but you can't really expect to change unless you take action. Call us today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. It could be the start of a whole new life for you. Christian counseling works, and we can help. Call 1-800-NEW-LIFE today. Someone who cares is always there at 1-800-NEW-LIFE.
Hi, this is Max Licato. My friends at New Life want to help you find healing and restoration based on God's truth. They have a workshop to help men who are stuck in the entanglement of pornography. They have another for both men and women. to deal with any issue you might be facing, anger, depression, grief, or whatever you're struggling with, they can help you. Or if you know someone fighting an addiction to drugs or alcohol, they offer a Christian treatment program. And if you know someone struggling with an eating disorder, they can help you there too. Call them today at 1-800-NEW-LIFE. That's 1-800-639-5433. The Apostle Paul writes in Romans about the transformation that comes through the renewing of your mind. It's God's Holy Spirit that makes this happen, and He's working through this ministry at New Life. Call today and see how you can experience that for yourself. 1-800-NEW-LIFE, 1-800-639-5433.
To find out more information about New Life, or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, back to the program.
We are back. Steve Arterburn here with Milan Yurkovich. He is the author of How We Love and How We Love Our Children, or Our Kids, and Dr. Sherry Denham. She is in private practice, really focuses on the brain and all sorts of cool things that bring additional insight into a person's problem. But right now, let's go to John. John from Los Angeles listens on KKLA. Hi, John.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
How could we help you today?
My question is, I'm starting to go to counseling because for the last 2 years, I just got married 2 years ago, and for the duration of the 2 years, I found out my wife was committing adultery. And
That's tough.
Yeah, pretty tough. And just getting to my point is, and I don't want to make my story long drawn out, but my question is how do I go through the process of grieving and forgiving with her living there with me? Because when I get home, I just want to just cry, but I have to suck it up and be the man. Because when I was growing up, my dad was a Marine. He said, guys, boys don't cry, but I'm hurting inside. And she's trying to give me counsel to say, you know what, trust in the Lord. Hey, read. Hey, memorize scripture. But for me, I don't know. I have so much anger built inside, or I just don't know how to deal with it.
Well, I tell you, I think one of the most effective things you could do is to go home and cry your eyes out. I think it might draw her to you. I don't think faking it because she's there is going to be helpful to your relationship.
Yeah, I mean, I've cried for the first week, and it feels good, but I just need practical tools on how to grieve. Is it ungodly for me to say, hey, you need to leave the house for a while I work on my own individual issues? She's all for working together through this marriage, and I just, it's unfair how she wants to work together now. Why didn't she want to work together before?
Yeah.
Well, maybe because she's afraid you're going to leave now. You know, and before you knew about the affair, it was all good to her, right? She had you, she had this other person, so she wasn't having to confront possibly you losing you. And that is frightening her. She doesn't want to lose you, but she has to look at what's going on, right, in her life. But we want to help you to know how to walk through this right now. Did you know about any affair? Were there any signs or symptoms prior to that?
Yes, and the thing is, our whole marriage for the last 2 years has been deceptive because I called her out maybe on 5 different occasions, but me not trying to be overbearing and trying to be allowing her to still be her individual person in this marriage, I was like, I'll let it go, you know, but next time I'm going to call this person for this inappropriate text. She would lie and say, well, it wasn't to me, and it's not for me. But little things that I seen throughout our 2 years of marriage, and it just snowballed until finally the guy got a hold of my number and called me and said, you know what, I got to tell you this. You know, she's lying to you. She's telling me that she's not married, that you're on her Facebook, you're her gay friend. Stuff like that. The marriage photos that she has on her Facebook, it's photoshopped, all this stuff. So I did see signs, but like I said, I was trying to be a nice guy to say, you know what, I'm going to let it slide. I'm going to be forgiving. But, you know, a lot of times the counselor is telling me, you got to forgive like God forgave, but
Okay, well, there's two kinds. There's John, there's two kinds of forgiveness. One is if you keep her, and one if you don't keep her. Now, the one if you don't keep her is a forgiveness that you give because you want to get yourself out of jail. You want to right. You want to get yourself out of this place where you just are eaten up by this every single day. And you part of forgiveness is letting go of a person's harm to us so that we can be okay apart from them and we're not consumed by them for the rest of their lives, of our lives. The other kind of forgiveness is when we're together. And if I'm going to give forgiveness to somebody that I'm with, I want to see if they're repentant, if they have an attitude that says, I was wrong, if they're trying to take a path of reconciliation. Because really, you have a biblical grounds for divorce. And the Bible doesn't say that you should just forgive and let her keep doing what she's doing. The Bible says hardness of heart, which your wife apparently has, is what God gave us as one of the reasons for divorce. So the point I'm trying to make is I wouldn't even think about forgiving her until she is and to stay in the marriage until she says, I want to stay. I was wrong. Will you forgive me?
Where is she in all that?
She's at that stage, but my trust has been so broken. It's just like alligator tears to me. It's just she's just saying it, and it's just so fresh where I'm like, I don't trust what you're telling me. She's crying and she's
good.
She's reading the word and
good. I'm glad she's like the person that you know is in jail overnight and they're all of a sudden very repentant because they've just been caught and their whole world falls down. I wouldn't trust a thing she says for a long time.
Well, she keeps telling me you gotta trust me. Just trust in the Lord and He's your security, and you need to build. We need to start building trust now. And I'm like, I try to build trust for 2 years.
Hey, don't. I wouldn't trust her as far as I could throw her. I don't know how that works.
Well,
but anyway,
you know,
this isn't the time to trust. She has to gain your trust, and she has not done that at all.
And she needs to get into some work, right? She needs to do some things outside of crying and just picking up the word, right? Don't you want to see her do some active things? She may be a relationship and love addict. Have you ever heard of that before?
Not really.
Okay.
Or a sex and love addict.
It could be a sex and love addict, you know, depending on what she's done. And so she needs to get into recovery group and start going and looking at those issues on why she has been so unfaithful for the whole term of your marriage. Mm. And maybe
so
even before that in your courtship, right?
Yeah.
And then you need to get into, it's great that you're seeing a therapist. Keep doing that. You're going to have to grieve and work through those issues. But you need to get into a CODA group, CODA for codependency. Because I'm hearing a nice guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so
we're out of time. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, so I would recommend you do that.
And poor John is just getting whatever advice he's getting, Steve. It's, you got to forgive like the Lord forgives. But the Lord has boundaries with his forgiveness. He says, you know, I'll forgive you, but you have to experience the cross of Christ and believe in him. He has standards for how the forgiveness takes place.
Yeah, and just that she's in the home is an example of his graceful spirit and his forgiving spirit. It just to do anything more than that is license. Okay, well, we're out of time, but we're not out of a website where you can go and get some help, and that's newlife.com. We need your help. You know, we have struggled these past few months, and we have had some folks come alongside us and help us. And if you haven't, I want to just encourage you to listen to what God is saying. And if God's saying, yeah, this is the kind of ministry that's worthy of your support, you want to see things happen like the things that happen here, then I hope you'll respond to that and you'll support us with your gifts. You can find out how to do that at newlife.com or by going to 1-800-NEW-LIFE, either one. We really love you around here. We want to be there for you. We don't want to go away. And it's kind of in your hands. And if you go to our website, you can see all the things we do, which are life-changing. We've got a Healing is a Choice weekend coming up. People will walk in there with wounds for years, and they'll leave without them. My thanks to Sherry Denham and to you, Milan Yurkovich, and to all who called and all that support us. God bless you. I hope you have a great day today. And we're going to see you here next time on New Life Live. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. We hope this program has helped you by getting you insights for handling the challenges you face in your life. We want you to know that we're here for you. But you also need to know that New Life Live is a listener-supported ministry. To make your donation or to get any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE or write to us at New Life Ministries, P.O. Box 1018, Laguna Beach, California, 92652. Please join us again tomorrow for New Life Live.